Hey everybody, Kevin Rose here. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin Rose Show. I gotta tell you, I'm pretty excited. It is full on fall here and it's starting to get pretty chilly and we're getting a little bit of rain out in Portland, Oregon. But I'm excited because I'm gonna be starting the Wim Hof method come probably November 1st. And for those that don't know, Wim Hof is known as the Iceman. He is the one that does the multi-week course on how to slowly ramp up your exposure to the cold and to the ice. And in doing so, you really increase your tolerance for the cold. You feel amazing. You jump out of bed in the morning, and it's a great thing to do during the winter months. I started this in New York, and it was absolutely freezing outside. There was, you know, multiple feet of snow, and I started doing the course, and, you know, it starts you off by just starting the shower on cold, and you jump in there for 15 seconds, and you quickly crank it back up to hot, and you slowly ramp up day over day, week over week. And by the end of this course, you are full on submerged in ice up to your neck and have no problem just sitting there. For me, I could sit there for 15 minutes up to my neck in a bathtub full of ice water. And I wasn't even shivering. So it was really dramatic results and I felt great doing it. I'm going to be sharing a lot of this. Actually, I'm going to be putting it on my Instagram stories. So if you want to follow along, follow me up at Instagram.com/Kevin Rose. That's if you're doing it on the web. If not, just go into the Instagram app and search for Kevin Rose and you'll find me there. Follow me there and you'll get all of that action. I'll kind of walk you through it. But I will say if you're really excited about it and you do want to follow along, the proper way to do it is actually to go and buy Wim's course because Wim has an awesome course that includes some stretching and some breathing exercises that are also really important. But I'll be giving you kind of my journey through my Instagram stories. Also wanted to tell you that I am hiring out here in Portland, Oregon. I've just now signed a lease for an office and we are expanding the Oak Meditation team. That is my kind of full-time focus these days. I still do a little bit of investing and work with the folks over at True Ventures. But my focus product-wise is on building out Oak Meditation. We are six people strong now. We'll be expanding that team to about 10 or so folks over the next few months. And we're really excited to roll out a new release of this come this fall or early spring. It's going to be completely revamped with a bunch of new fresh content and a lot of firsts, actually. You know, there's a lot of meditation apps out there and a lot of great ones, too. But I have a slightly different take on what we can do to hopefully encourage people to create a lifelong habit when they're meditating or getting started for the first time. So I'm excited to expose a lot of these features to you guys and get you on the beta as soon as possible. But if you'd like to join us, love to have you out here in Portland. You can just head over to oakmeditation.com and click on the little jobs or career button at the bottom and you'll see our available openings that we have right now. So we're hiring for meditation teachers. I'd also like to, if you're a senior iOS engineer and you've built some really high quality iOS apps in the past, we're hiring for that. Oh, also, I should say that I'm hiring for someone to help me with my podcast. So if you're a freelancer and you're looking to do more content, video content, and sit down with folks like Tony Robbins today, or any of the guests that I have on the show, I'm looking for someone to come with me, shoot the shows, edit them, and also create shareable Instagram content. So you can just reach out to me either through kevinrose.com on the about page and say I'm a freelancer and we'll get back to you on that. All right, so today's guest is Tony Robbins. Really excited and it was a great honor to have him on the show. I got a chance to meet him at one of his events, had a lot of fun there, learned a ton. He is just so good at deconstructing the human mind and helping us create a blueprint to live a more kind of thoughtful and planned life. And it's cool to see him tackling finance. So the reason we're talking today is we're talking about his new paperback book that just came out called Unshakable. This was a great book that I read from front to back. And when you think of Tony Robbins, if you're familiar with his work in the past, you don't immediately jump to, you know, finance guy because that hasn't been the stuff that he's done. But one of the things that I love, him being a lifelong learner, and it also reminds me of kind of, you know, Tim Ferriss in this way, is that if he wants to figure something out, he goes out there and interviews the absolute best people and then condenses down their knowledge and presents it back to us in something that we can wrap our heads around and implement in our own life. So, you know, this book, Unshakable, he's gone out there and interviewed all the most brilliant minds in finance, whether it be Warren Buffett or Bogle from Vanguard, and the list just goes on and on. and really figured out their blueprint and their game plan for how they create this, you know, unshakable portfolio, diverse portfolio of stocks and other assets, so that the next time there's some crazy downturn or recession, we're not just completely decimated. So I think this is such a great and important finance book. I highly recommend it. I will say up front, none of this is paid. Tony didn't pay me for having him on the show, even though we're talking about his book. And anytime there's like personal finance, I get a little bit freaked out by it because people think, oh, what's the motivation behind this show? And so much so that Tony was so concerned about this that he ended up donating 100% of the profits from this book to his nonprofit, Feeding America. So every time, every one book purchase actually contributes 50 meals to those in need. So I thought that was a really awesome way to kind of distance himself from all of that. So this is a great book. It's a great cause, and I'm excited to have Tony on the show. I learned a lot, and I have actually implemented a lot of the strategies that he talks about in this book in my own personal portfolio. So this is Tony Robbins. Unshakable. I love the book. I read the entire thing. I will say Money to Master the Game, I skimmed through. It was pretty big.
673 pages. Yeah.
It's pretty massive. But Unshakable, I went through and did the actually from the very beginning all the way through to the end. And I learned a ton. And one of the things that I was curious about is that you seem to surround yourself with just some of the best money managers and financial experts in the world. And I was thinking about just generally a lot of really well-known people that have done well, that are very successful, tend to raise their hand and say, I don't know something. And that's how they're lifelong learners. Like, how did you go about like researching this book? And like, how do you, when you want to approach a new topic, like say finance, like how do you master that?
Well, I'm a big believer, I think, you know, in modeling. You know, my original teacher was a man named Jim Rohn. And when I was 17, he said, success leaves clues. You know, if somebody is really successful at anything, they're not lucky. If they've lost weight and kept it off for 10 years, it's not luck. They're doing something different than you. If they're financially wealthy and they started with nothing and they've got money and they're successful 20 years from now, anybody can get rich. Staying rich is a different thing. And really what it means to me is wealth. You know, somebody who can do well spiritually, mentally, emotionally. And so I'm always looking for those role models. So in 2008, when I saw so many people suffering. I mean, I grew up with so much suffering. It's what drives me. I love to see people lit up, but most importantly, I want to leave them. I want them to be free from the pain if possible. And there was so much pain. I mean, wealthy people are having pain. People who are struggling before were really struggling now. And I knew what the problem was. And because I worked with Paul Tudor Jones, one of the top 10 financial traders for, you know, 23 years. And I've been through every up and down. And so I did incredibly well in 2008, and I wanted to tell people what to do. And Paul was saying, Tony, you're going to create a panic. You just can't do that. And so 2 years later, when nothing had changed, I was so angry. And I watched this show called Inside Job. Did you happen to see that documentary by chance? It's worth seeing. But at the end, it's a systematic breakdown. It was nominated for Academy Award to show you what actually happened and how a small number of people basically almost destroyed the entire world economy. And their punishment was we gave them more of our money. That was the punishment. Yeah. And so I was, you know, either totally depressed or angry. I was the angry type because depressed doesn't change anything. I thought, okay, I'm just one guy. What can I do? And I said, I've got access. So I thought if I could interview the 50 smartest people in the world financially, all who started with nothing, nobody from the Lucky Sperm Club, you know, they had to literally start from nothing and build it, and say they would have the truth about how to do well. And so I just decided systematically to do it. And I did, you know, I got such great rapport with each of them that they opened more doors. And I got interviews with people who hadn't done interviews in 10, 12, 15 years. And so I wrote, you know, Money Master the Game, because I wanted to write something my billionaire clients could do. And a millennial just getting started has too much debt, things they don't know what to do could go. But after I wrote it, I was thrilled with it and, you know, great response. But, you know, as you know, most people don't read, and that big a book kind of intimidates people. Plus, we'd have the longest bull market in our history. So I was like, if people are going to go right back to the same problem as they did in 2008, if we don't show them how to do well, and not only show them how to do well, but show them logically, systemically, this is how the system really works. For three centuries, this is how it's worked. It's not something new. And so the way I attack things is find the best on earth, find a way to add value to them, because they're not going to give you your time otherwise. And then let them systematically take you to more of the greatest experts, because great people know great people. And so I'm now starting a new book that's on, you know, regenerative medicine. It's really, you know, a life force, basically. I've been on a unique journey recently with my own body. And stem cells have been a huge transformation to that. But I just got back, for example, from, I went to the Vatican, you know, got to hang out with the Pope a little bit, which was interesting, really interesting.
That's amazing.
But the real cool thing was he had this regenerative health conference there at the Vatican of all places. It shows you how much the world's changed. And there are things coming right now that things that you would think really would be something that happened 20 years from now, that are happening in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. They're already in phase 2 and phase 3 trials of the FDA that will revolutionize our experience completely. So I'm now interviewing the number one greatest experts on the face of the earth in this area, and then bringing my voice to it to simplify it, make it clear, so that people have access to answers that they think are insane. You know, like, for example, pancreatic cancer is pretty much, you're basically told you're terminal when you get it.
Yeah, you've got like 3 months at that point,
yeah,
right?
Three to six at most. And it's horrific what happens. There's a particular company that's been working for 10 years and has figured out how to stimulate your own stem cells. And they've got a 97.2% cure rate on this thing right now. And they're in phase 2B trials. So, you know, phase 1 is safety, phase 2 is efficacy, and phase 3 is efficacy at scale. So we're talking about 2.5, 3 years. I met a woman, to give you an idea, who looked like, well, looked beautiful when I met her, but then they showed me the picture of her from 3 months earlier, and she looked like an Auschwitz, you know, survivor, all bones, skeleton. And she not only totally healed, now she's dating. I mean, it's just like,
wow.
And the beauty of these things, they make me crazy. I want everybody to know so they can take advantage of it. And so my driving force is that passion to serve and to give people answers. But then by going to the best on earth that are on the cutting edge, you can give people not just inspiration, but you can give them true strategies and tools that can change their life. So that the last 6, 7 years, that's been about money. Is, you know, I do all these subjects, but it's been the primary focus from a book perspective. I haven't written a book in 20 years. I hate writing, but I want people to have this. And so now I'm going to do the same thing. Plus, we've donated 100% of all the money from all these books to Feeding America. So we're going to hit 400 million meals this year in 4 years. I'm going to feed 1 billion people over the next 6 years, 1 billion meals. And then I'm working on an X Prize that will help us feed 1 billion sustainably, you know, through across the world. So, but these things, just the answer to your question is I go find the best that exists. I find a way to get to them. I will network, do whatever it takes. And when I'm there, I add super value. So, I mean, for example, when I went and saw, let's say somebody like Carl Icahn. You know, Carl agreed to the interview, the whole thing. And, you know, Carl, most people don't realize, is more successful than Warren Buffett, but he's not as nice as Warren Buffett. So he's not as fun as Warren Buffett. You know, Warren Buffett's had a 20% compounded return since the 60s, and he has a 30% compounded return since the 60s. But most people don't even know it. You know, they put him as the master of the universe on time, but not always the most likable guy to people. But I loved him. And I show up, and he goes, no cameras. And he'd already agreed to the cameras. And I said, well, okay, but you agree. He goes, no cameras. I said, okay, audio team coming. He goes, no audio. I'm like, wait a second, what am I going to do here with you? He goes, come on, kid, you got 15 minutes, bring a pen and paper. Right? It's... But, you know, 3 hours later, after I've added enough value, and he's my buddy, and he's doing endorsements of the book and supporting and saying, wow, you can really help change things. And so that's the kind of way things network and open up. And then what I got to do is synthesize everything I learned to see what are the core consistent patterns. Because everybody does things in their own idiosyncratic way. But what's universal that we can really bring?
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of try to attack things. And with this book, you know, I really just wanted to simplify it. So in a weekend, a millennial who's, again, overloaded with debt, thinks there's no future, I want to transform them in a weekend and show them they can really do it. Or a baby boomer that thinks it's too late. You know, that's the typical thing they think.
Yeah.
And show them, hey, it's still winnable. It's not winnable, you know, with some miracle, but it's winnable by some specific steps at this stage. And it's winnable maybe in a different way than they expect.
You know, we see all these advertisements on TV, and it's just like bank after bank or big financial institutions saying like, hey, come sign up here. And it's like people shaking hands and looking very secure in the future. Why can these companies not get it right? Like, why are they screwing up? Why can't we just go to like one bank or institution that we're comfortable with that's been around for 100 years and believe that they'll do it the right way?
There's nothing wrong with these institutions. They're not bad people. They're not, you know, scheming to destroy people like I've heard some people talk about. They're just businesses, and their corporate, you know, of their focus and their reason for being and the mindset of most of them is to take care of shareholders, right? That's what they believe. And so they don't take care of the customer first, because the only way they're going to expand shareholders is get more fees out of you. The only way to get more fees out of you is make this so complex that you give up and let them take it over. I mean, I'll give you an example. In the 401k space, you know, I was with, who was it with? I was with Jack Bogle over at Vanguard. And he said, Tony, I get your total sincerity in doing this. And he said, I think you got the power to educate a ton of people. But if you want to help people, help in the 401k space, because he said it is where most Americans have their money. Second is their home. First is the 401k. 90 million Americans, and they're being completely screwed. And I had no idea how bad, but here's an industry that's a $6 trillion with a T size industry, $6 trillion industry. And up until 4 years ago, now it's been 6 years ago, they didn't have to tell you what they were charging you. What industry on the face of the earth can do that? And as a result, you could be buying the same product. You know, imagine you buy a Honda Accord for, you know, $25,000, $30,000, but your neighbor's paying $800,000 for the same car. That's what happens in the financial industry. You're paying, like, you know, with one of my companies, it was 0.5% to own, let's say, the S&P 500 or Vanguard, you know, 0.05 of a basis point.
Right.
Or you can go to another firm and they'll charge you 2.5 points. So you can be in Vanguard. I mean,
yeah.
It's the most insane thing I've ever seen. And so most Americans, 71% of Americans think they have no 401k fees, which is the biggest lie on the planet because they never had to be told. So 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, the Department of Labor changed the rules and said, you must disclose fees. So how did the industry respond? These large institutions whose names are usually on, you know, on arenas, that'll give you a clue. What do they do? They made 30 to 50 page disclosure documents that are so complex.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's reading that. Yeah.
I'm talking to, like, people that are highly educated can't figure out where the fees are. And there's usually about 17 other things they don't call fees that are fees in there. And here's what you got to understand. If you're paying 1% more than you need to, not hundreds of percent more, 1% more equals 10 years of retirement income you just gave up. So
yeah,
the average person
yeah.
in their 401k, according to Fortune, is paying 3.4% when they think they're paying less than 1% or nothing. And to give you an idea, if you're paying, you know, most cases you can do this for 60, 70 basis points, the whole nine yards if you do it properly. And people are paying 2.5 or 3. So they're giving up 20 years, 25 years of income. You know, Jack Bogle explains to me best. He says, Tony, here's the math. You put up all the money, you put up all the risk, and you get 33% of the profit. Almost 65% of that profit is going to other people that are not adding value to. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. So my whole focus is let's educate people to the truth and then they can make their own choices. And yes, it's not these are bad people. They're just doing what their charter is, you know, maximize profitability. And so it's really hard. There's only 310,000 professionals in this industry in the whole United States. There are 200 different names for them, right? You know, wealth manager, private wealth manager. I mean, you go through the list.
Yeah.
90% of them are brokers. And there's nothing wrong with a broker, except that a broker is somebody who's been trained by the institution to sell these things because they're their most profitable, not because they're their best for you. And, you know, we try to pass a fiduciary standard. Obama did, and it failed miserably. You know, they got eaten up by, you know, all this, the interest in this business and this industry. And they're all saying it'll destroy the business. So a fiduciary is what you want. Only 10% of those people, you know, 31,000 are fiduciaries, which means someone who's legally responsible to make sure that you're truly looked out for, that your interests are ahead of their own. A fiduciary, if they tell you buy Apple this morning and this afternoon they buy it for themselves cheaper, they have to give it to you. But that's less than 10% of the market, and it's worse than that. I found out afterwards to my partner that there's these gray areas in the law that a bunch of these guys just lie. They say, oh, I'm a fiduciary, and they are, but the law allows them in the middle of the conversation to change hats and become a broker too.
How do you find them? How do you find the right people?
In the book, I give you a series of questions to ask, because out of the 310,000, or you know, the 31,000, let's say, that are fiduciaries, only 5,000 of those are not duly registered, a true fiduciary. So you're talking about 1.6% of all professionals. And then they're not all equal in their skill. You can have somebody who's totally honest, like here's a salesman, here's a fiduciary, like your lawyer, your accountant, or your doctor has to put your needs first. Well, you want somebody on this side. You want somebody that's far over here that's a true fiduciary. But then there's another scale, sophisticated versus unsophisticated. If I'm totally sophisticated up here, I'm going to be able to do more for you. If I'm unsophisticated, I'm sincere, but I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And so of those 1.6%, the number that really have sophistication is incredibly small. So, you know, when I wrote Money Master the Game, I try to, you know, tell people, get a fiduciary. Otherwise, all they got to do is say, well, you know, I think this fits your goals. So that's really what they're talking about. And they can put anything in there. There's no side on it. And by the way, a lot of these brokers, they're totally sincere. They might even own the same product. It's all they know. It's what they've been trained to do. So when I went to this in Money Master Game, I had 10, I paid out of my own pocket to develop this system where people could click in and get all their accounts and see what they're really paying and what their real return is. Spent about $500,000 and then donated that too. And then I said, okay, people are going to need a fiduciary. So I came up with 10 of the biggest and best fiduciaries, I thought, and put them on a piece. And then again, donate all the money that they would have normally earned to charity as well, to feed people. And then I find out through my partner, Peter, later, he wasn't my partner. He calls me up and he goes, I need to meet with you. And he sat me down and he goes, Tony, there are these people there, some of which are, you know, you consider to be the best in the area, are just deceiving you and everybody else. I mean, they're just, and then he showed me how they did it. And I just couldn't believe it. So that's why I made Peter my partner in the new book. And we wrote this book to really educate people and free people, because you're talking about decades of income that's being stolen from people. And there's nobody out there, government try to change it. The only way to change it is become self-educated so you know what to do.
Yeah. How do you decide, or how do you even peel off extra money? Like if you're someone that's barely making ends meet.
Yes.
And you really don't have that extra cash to invest. And you're like, well, I can barely afford to actually, you know, put food on the table. Like, how am I going to find that extra, whatever they think it might be, 10, 20% of their income to actually invest? Like, what are your strategies there?
Well, I can give you a couple. First of all, everybody says that. And anybody that ever comes up with a number and cuts it off and automates it, adjusts. I don't care who you are. There's a guy named Theodore Johnson I talk about in the book. True story. This guy never made more than $14,000 a year working for UPS in the 50s. He retired with $70 million. How? One of his friends understood compounded interest and came to him and said, I'm going to make you a wealthy man. We're going to do a wealth tax. He goes, wealth tax? He goes, yeah, we're going to tax 20% of your income. He goes, what? He goes, it's not for the government. It's for you. It's for your future self. He goes, I can't live on what I have right now. He goes, we're going to automate it. You're never going to see it, and you will adjust. And this is not somebody who had like the capacity, as many of your audience are entrepreneurs or business people, they can learn to earn more. This guy didn't have that capacity. How do you end up with 70 million bucks? Well, when you take 20% and you compound it in an investment, that's what it came to. He gave away $35 million while he was alive. And the secret is, I tell people, look, if the government came in and said, we're going to tax you 20%, you said, I won't pay it, I don't have it, you'll eventually pay it and you'll adjust to it. And you'll either earn more or you'll be smarter. So I tell people, you've got to just take it out and you got to automate it. But there is a, you know, I'm looking always for strategies. And there's a couple of just brilliant financial psychologists that, one was nominated for a Nobel Prize for something called Save More for Tomorrow. And the idea was this, take 3% of what you have. Any idiot can take 3% and not notice it. Even if you think you can't, you can. Then every time you get a raise or at your own business, your income increases X percentage, you put another 3% in there. They did this with people in the Midwest who are making less than $30,000, $35,000 a year as a test. People had said they didn't have an extra penny, and they really didn't. But within 12 years, the average person in that group was saving 14%, and 65% of them were saving 19%. Of those numbers, I don't care who you are, you get wealthy. I mean, let me give you a number just for your listeners, because we all know compounding. But you know, if you really want to understand compounding, the greatest thing about compounding is it takes, the more time you have, the less money you need. So if I go to a kid today, say, you know, a Z generation or an early, let's say millennial, let's say a Z generation, and go, look, you're just turning 19. What if you say, I know you don't have a lot of downside. You don't have a lot of overhead right now. Most of these kids are actually leaving at home today. So let's take $300 a month and set it aside. Would you be willing to do that if you only had to do it for 8 years and then for the rest of your life, you never had to invest again and you have financial freedom? And kids go, there's no way. Go, here's how you do it. $300 a month from 19 to 27 years old, 8 years. Don't invest another dime. Let's put that money in the market. The market over the last 100 years has averaged 10%, but the last 20 years, it's averaged, you know, 8%. Let's use the lower number. You compound at 8%. If you stop at 27 years old, never add another dime, and all you do is leave it in the market, which I wouldn't recommend. I'd recommend continue to invest. You'll have $1.8 million at retirement. Now, you could have a friend who catches on at the end and starts at 27 and says, I'm going to do this, and they do 300 a month all the way till they're 65. And they'll end up with $400,000 less money. And they put in 140 grand in, you know, 40 years investing. You did 8 years investing and put in 28 grand. 28 grand is 1.8 million. So that's, we don't have to earn this idea that you got to, we're going to hit a home run and we're going to earn this huge amount of money. Look at all these great, you know, athletes, actors, actresses that made all this money. And now they're totally broke. I mean, the most extreme is like a Mike Tyson. He made a $500 million income and he went bankrupt. You know, you go, well, he's crazy. Well, you know, Elton John was on the verge of bankruptcy just about 10 or 15 years ago as his spending was there. He had so much income and he turned the thing around, thank God. Or, you know, 50 Cent is worth 50 cents now. And he was worth $200 or $300 million, but he didn't manage his money. So it's not, can you earn it? It's can you earn it while you sleep? Can you earn it through time? That's really what this game is about.
What about somebody that's a little bit later in life? Like, how do you handle a baby boomer or someone that's like, okay, I didn't save like shit. Like, I have, you know, 20 grand in the bank. Like, what do I do? I'm in my 50s.
Like,
how do you handle that?
The first thing you got to do for them is you got to help them to understand what's their outcome. See, everybody thinks the goal is to never work again. Have so much money, I'd never work again. Well, you never have to work again. I never have to work again. You built so many great companies and you're so young. But if you didn't work, you go crazy. Work could be just, you know, giving your time away to your family. It could be nonprofit. But men that don't work, the insurance industry shows in 5 years they die after they retire. Not true of women because they never retire. They take care of everything and everyone all the time, right? So the goal is for these people to say, look, it's not to not work, it's to not have to work. And yet you're going to want to. So with somebody who's really far along and they're late in the game, I get them to see there are multiple financial goals. And the first one is financial security versus absolute financial freedom. Just think of security versus freedom. It's a different level of emotion, but security is a pretty amazing gift to have for anybody.
Yeah.
And to be secure, I found there's five things that'll make people secure, and then they can work part-time or a little bit, but their life, their basic life is handled. And what they are is, if we take what your mortgage costs are, we could get it so you never have to work again, and your mortgage is paid for the rest of your life. You never have to work again. Your utilities are paid. Never work again. Your food is paid for your family. Never work again. All your transportation and your basic insurance needs, five things. That number is about 65 or 70% less than independence where you don't work at all. And when you get all those covered without working, most people want to do something where they can earn a little bit along the way so they can have some additional choices in life, but all the pressure is off. And I can show any baby boomer how to do that, even if they're starting in their 50s.
Yeah, that's a big deal just to have that release of anxiety and get rid of that pressure of, you know, knowing where your next meal is going to come from.
Yes. Which, by the way, I want to just mention, it's why I'm so committed. It's not because I'm such a good person. I had no money and no food at Thanksgiving when I was 11, and somebody came and fed my family. So I promised to myself I would find a way to do that. So I started 17 with two families and four and eight. And, you know, now we're feeding, you know, 100 million people a year. But that growth and that expansion really has come about because 49 million people in this country, the richest country in the world, wake up every morning not knowing where the next meal is going to come from. 17 million are children. So I just want people to know, like, while you're helping change your life, we're going to feed 50 families with the book that you buy. Yeah. So this is something where it's a virtuous cycle for everybody.
This is one of the things I love about the book and about your mission in general is that I feel that, like, when you pick up these finance books, like, there can be an agenda.
Yes.
Like, there's an agenda to buy something or go a certain way. And the fact that you're just, like, donating this all back and making this, like, more of a nonprofit venture, it's just awesome.
Thank you.
I had a question about, you know, we've been in just great bull market.
Longest, like, in history.
Yeah. So, yeah,
as of last week,
coming,
longest,
right?
In history. It's crazy.
Yeah. So something's coming. You say unshakable, you know, the title of the book. Yeah. Like, how do you prevent, like, just your assets from getting demolished when inevitably something crazy takes place?
Well, the first thing you got to remember is that when I interviewed these people, the wealthiest people in the world that started with nothing, they're all different. Like, they all approach things differently. So if you're talking to somebody like, you know, Jack Bogle, it's by the index, right? You know, because he built Vanguard and he's genius and he's done incredibly well. If you're talking to somebody like Warren Buffett, it's value investing, but he tells people to buy the index because it's too complex for most people. If you go to somebody like Ray Dalio, the greatest hedge fund investor in the world, he's a macro investor. So they all approach it differently. But there were four things, Kevin, that really they all had in common in spite of desperate different ways of making money, and they're all successful. The first one is counterintuitive. They're obsessed with not losing money. The average investor is like, how do I make money? And they make huge mistakes because of that. They understand that if I lose 50% in a market like you're talking about, it drops 50% in on a bear market. First of all, I can't afford to do that because if I do, if you ask the average person, if you lose 50%, how much do you got to earn to get even? And they go, 50%. No. If you had $100,000 and you lost 50%, you got 50 grand now. If it goes up 50%, you have 75 grand. You're still down 25,000. You got to make 100% to get even, right? So the way they do that, Kevin, and the way to answer your question is they all are obsessed with the second most important decision of life, which is asset allocation. First one is you got to get in the game. Am I going to become an owner instead of just, you know, a consumer? Because that's how you're going to become wealthy long term. You don't buy an Apple phone, you're going to have that, but you buy Apple, you buy the best companies in the world that you possibly can, right? You become an owner. But the second decision, the one that determines whether you're going to succeed or not, once you've got some money set aside or a percentage that you're constantly feeding, is, what is your asset allocation? When I talked to David Swensen, who's the chief investment officer at Yale, it took Yale 100 years to acquire, you know, their first $1 billion, which is amazing. He made it into $25 billion in less than two decades. And when you look around, you say, how the hell does this guy do this? What has he done? What makes him different than everybody else? The thing that makes him different is he's constantly looking and saying, how do I get the most possible protection from what I'm doing? That's the first thing. How do I protect the downside? They're all obsessed with that. Then the second thing they all want to know, and this is more interesting, is they want what they call asymmetrical risk reward. By the way, just so I'm clear, they have asset allocation broken down so they're not exposed to the market. If the market goes 50%, they don't lose 50% of their assets because they've diversified, right? You can't put all your assets in one area. Ray Dalio told me, he said, Tony, everybody gets hooked. If you grew up poor and your family, you know, fixed up houses and turned them around, it's one of the things that my family did. He goes, you want to do real estate the rest of your life, and you're going to be rewarded for it and rewarded for it until you're not. If you're somebody bought you stock when you were 11 years old, you're a stock person for the rest of your life. He goes, but the problem is, at one stage, you're going to lose 50 to 70% of that asset. It doesn't matter what the asset is. All assets go through a cycle. And if that's later in life, you're screwed. So they all operate that I know I'm going to be wrong. They're totally different than CNBC commentators that tell you how it's going to be. They go, I got ideas, but I know I'm going to be wrong. So I need an asset allocation where I diversify my risk so I'm never at that much risk in any asset. That's number one. Number two, this asymmetrical risk reward. What the hell does that mean? Most people think these multi-billionaires are people that just took these huge risks and they just got, you know, intestinal fortitude, balls of steel, right? You know, and so they hung on and they won. It's totally false. 99% of them don't take those kinds of risks. That's why they're multi-billionaires. They look for the opportunity where it's the least risk with the most upside. When that ratio is on your side, things change. So I'll give you an example. Paul Tudor Jones, who I've coached now for what's been 24 years. And he hasn't lost money in 24 years in his own investing. It's just mind-boggling what this guy's done. There's nobody in his category. You know, the Ray Dalios, maybe a couple of them, but he's really, really unique. And his, when I met him and he was having some challenges 24 years ago, he adopted a principle and he lost it. And it was, every time I invest a dollar, I want to try and make five. I know I'm going to be wrong most of the time. But if I'm wrong, I can risk another dollar, have a second approach at it. Yeah, I'm still going to be way up, right? I can risk another dollar, I'm still up. So he can be wrong four out of times, five times and be okay with that philosophy. Or, you know, another example of this would be, you know, if you know anything about investing and you say, okay, Kyle Bass is a pretty famous guy in the investing world because in 2008, 2009, during the worst economic crisis we've ever had, he took $30 million and turned it into $2 billion in a few years, in the worst time in history. Now, how the hell do you do that? Well, his approach to that was really simple. The complexity of it, I can make it as complex as you want, but the most simple thing you need to understand is he structured his investments. So every time the most he risked was 6 cents for the upside of a dollar. Well, if you're only risking 6 cents to make a dollar, you could be wrong 15 times and still make money. So that's how he did it. So, or one more example would be, if you saw Richard Branson's, I'm lucky enough to be a friend with, and this guy is such a genius. He risks his life all the time, right? He recently had a bike accident. He almost died from like about 3 or 4 months ago. You know, he's always on a plane, a train, a helicopter, a balloon doing something. But when it comes to investing, he has a totally different approach. He's not a giant risk taker. He's asymmetrical risk reward completely. When he started Virgin Air, he had, I think he bought 10 planes. He negotiated for a year with Boeing in order to get this deal. This is a huge endeavor. If I'm wrong and I fail in the first 3 years, I want to give you back your planes and there's no negative cost to me whatsoever. He cut that deal. So what happens? He had no downside, only upside. Yeah. Well, those are the deals that make people wealthy.
How do they people find those though? Like, I feel like, you know, we probably have access to those types of deals. Certainly in the kind of like technology, angel investing space, that's the stuff that I love to do because you have an order of magnitude potential upside. Yes. But like, how does the average person, you know, they think, well, I can go buy Apple stock, but that's not going to 5X, right? Like, so where do you find those? Like, how do you thoughtfully pick out those individual investments?
Well, that's why I wanted to get people hooked up with great RIAs. And then as I dug in, it was difficult to find the great RIAs. And so when Peter came to me and he showed me all this abuse in the system, I kicked everybody off the platform. And I said to him, how about you become my partner? Because Peter has been the number one rated financial advisor. He had 3 years in a row. It's never happened in history. And then he had 2 years in a row on CNBC. And now this last year, he's again number one with Forbes as well. I mean, no one in history has had his track record. And what blew me away by him is his fees are small, but he's really like, you know, you and I are, you know, our billionaire friends almost all have a home office. And you, as you well know, it's a group of people that don't just focus on the investments. They focus on your mortgage. They focus on every area of finance for you. He creates a home office. In the past, most of his clients are like, you know, millionaires to billionaires, basically just business people. And he charged less than 1%, like 85 basis points, some cases 65 basis points. He's based in Kansas City. I don't know how the hell he does it, but he is the best I've ever seen, because he, you know, normally you've got an investment guy telling you one thing, your accountant's telling you another. They don't think about the taxes. And, you know, you're all trying to balance this. Unless you're really sophisticated, it's hell.
Yeah.
He, because of the volume, when I started with him, he had $16 billion. Now he's at $38 billion of assets. He's on the way to $50 wow. billion, the fastest growing RIA in the world, and super humble guy. But it's all about adding more value. And because of his size, he's able to bring these opportunities in. What I convinced him to do is, I said, if I'm going to be your partner, I said, I want to help people that you're not helping. I want to help people who got like $50,000. I know you're not going to make money off of them, but I'm asking you as a partner, I can help bring more people, be exposed to what you do. I want to advise your team on how to take care of these people. But I said, I want you to do this. And I said, I know there's no economic reason to do it, but there's, you're a good man. You give back to your community. And some of these people will become customers because they'll grow with you. And so I got him to agree to do this. So now people with $50,000 can get the same kind of advice that a billionaire or a multimillionaire would get through creative planning. And people can go to, you can go to creative planning or showmethefees.com, and they can show you exactly where you currently are, and they can show you other opportunities. They can give you a second opinion, and everybody should get a second opinion. Now, if they do, people should know I'm part of that organization. I'll benefit from that if you do it. It's not why I'm telling you this, but you know, you can make your own judgments what's there. But I think it's good to have a second opinion on anything. And that's kind of how I've gotten access for the general population. You and I were fortunate enough to be in a stage of life, and where you are in proximity in Silicon Valley, you know, opportunities are a dime a dozen, as you know. It's really going yeah. through them to find the very best that you can. You're still going to be wrong on many of them, but that's a part of the asset allocation, not putting all your eggs in one basket. Just to finish the four, if I could, Kevin. So the first is, you know, it sounds simple, but don't lose money. And the way you don't lose money is asset allocation. Mm-hmm. That's how you don't ever get, if the market drops 50%, you're not exposed all in one basket, so to speak.
Yeah, that is my biggest problem. I spoke with Peter, and Peter's like, Kevin, dude, you're all tech stocks. What are you doing here?
And you're pulled, like, because think about it, there's buckets of where you can put your money. You can put it in things that are really secure, but really secure things grow really slowly. You get a small return.
Yeah.
Or you can do things that have super high risk, but you don't think about that. You know, we're seduced by the growth. And if you've had a home run, you're sucked in, and you go, okay, super high growth. You forget that it's high risk, and you can make a fortune, but also lose it all. And so the secret is finding a balance. And the balance is based on, you know, how much, when do you need the cash? You know, if you're 25, you're a millennial, you can screw up multiple times and still get financially free because of compounding and time, right? If you're 55 or 60 and you're heading towards, you need it at 65, you're going to have to make decisions a little differently to get where you want to go. Mm-hmm. Second thing is you got to look at is what's your risk tolerance? You know, everybody thinks, oh, I can take plenty of risk till they lose money. And so, you know, I play a game in one of my seminars where I have people, I say, I play some music as they stand up and I reach in my pocket and I say, make change with people. And I just take out some money and change with another person. So they all model it. It goes on for, you know, the length of a song, 3 or 4 minutes. And then people sit down and I just start up on some new subject. And they invariably, somebody raises their hand. They're totally pissed off and they're going, that guy, I want my money back. It's like, what do you mean? He goes, I gave him a $100 bill. He gave me a buck. And I said, well, first of all, who said it was your money? Second of all, who said the game's over? And third of all, why the hell did you give somebody a dollar for $100 for a dollar? You're not exactly a value investor here. And you see people stressed about $100. They go, if you're stressed about $100, you're never going to make it as an investor because you're going to lose money. So you got to decide how much is secure, how much is more at risk. And the balance of these is not based on, you know, the old thing, well, it's your age in bonds or some bullshit like that. That's
the industry. That's what I was taught. Yeah,
that's the industry. So how old are you, may I ask?
41.
So, you know, they tell you have 41% in bonds.
Right,
that's absurd. You're a wealthy man. You're young. You've got plenty of time. You got a taste for risk tolerance. It's pretty damn good, right? Because I've seen what you've done in business. That would be insane for you. That would just like, that wouldn't make any sense at all. So you got to look at what's your risk tolerance? When do you need the money? And then also, what's your access to cash flow? If you have a lot of cash flow, you can afford to do more things. If it's tighter, you got to make different decisions on this asset allocation. So you need to not lose money by asset allocation. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be wrong. I don't care who you are. Second, you want to look for asymmetrical risk reward where you can find it. And you got to find usually an RIA or somebody to help you do that. But there's multiple ones in the book. It's not just CPI. There's other good ones there as well. And I give you the criteria to look for. Third, they all are obsessed with tax efficiency. And they don't start with tax efficiency. If you start by, I want to save money on taxes as an investment, then it's not an investment. It's a scheme. And those things always fall apart. But if I do find something that's a great investment, I don't believe I lose money, and I have good asset allocation, so even if I'm wrong, I'm okay. And if I've got asymmetric risk reward, the next thing is I want to net the most dollars out of it. So I've trained everybody that works around me in the financial world, don't tell me my returns. That's bullshit. Tell me my net returns after fees and after taxes. Those are the biggest costs you've got. And it'll blow your mind what happens in that area unless you're obsessed by it. And so they look and see that. And then fourthly, just to finish quick, the one we all know, what does every investor know? Even if you're not an investor, you know, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. But dude, guys like you and I, we tend to put all our eggs in a few baskets, right?
Of course.
And it's where we feel we have more control. It's our own businesses. But, you know, industries change, technology changes, competition changes, government changes the rules. You get everything right and still get screwed. So I tell people, everybody needs a second business, and it's part of diversification. So these guys diversify. They don't just say, okay, I love real estate, so I'm going to do real estate, or I love, you know, growing companies and I love being an angel investor. You know, you can win really big and, as you know, lose really big in that area. They go, okay, I want to diversify amongst assets. It's not all real estate. It's all not stocks. It's a mixture of these things. Second, I want to diversify within them. I don't want all my money in one piece of real estate. What if it goes wrong? Or one company. I want the index, for example, because it's cheap and I get all the best companies. Thirdly, I want to diversify across countries, right? Because there's different economies. Mm-hmm. And fourthly, I want to diversify over time. I want to invest over time because I'm going to be wrong at times, and I'm going to still be okay if I do it. Those four elements are the only things that are universal amongst all these investors that are the best in the world.
One of the things I'm curious about is, like, you know, when you hit that goal, that financial freedom, and you finally get there, you know, where do you think, so many people think, if I only had, you know, $1 million, I'd have this inner peace and this inner happiness. Yeah. Like, and we all know that's bullshit, right?
Bullshit.
So I'm curious, like, what does money give you and what does it not give you?
Good question. I think in my experience, it gives you whatever you do emotionally with yourself, right? People think it's money. Like, you know, of the 50 billionaires that I got a chance to interview, it's actually been more than that now. I'm probably become good friends with at least 13, 14 of them, maybe 15 of them. And out of that group of people of 50, I would say, honestly, and I am not with them every day of their life, so it's not fair, but I would say the vast majority are not happy. And it's because
that's a bummer.
It's
sucks.
A real bummer. And people go, see, that's what money does. No. Or they go, money makes you mean. No, money is a magnifying tool. If you're mean, you have more to be mean with. If you're loving and giving, you got more to give with, right? It just, all it does is magnify your true nature. And what I tell people, and you know, in the book, I go through a whole chapter on, look, if you got $1 billion, but your emotional home, the place you always come back to, we all have a place we get back to. It's like, you know, people that are always worried. And if there's nothing to worry about, they worry about the country. They worry about people they don't even know. Or there are people that are always angry. You know, they find things to be angry about. Or there's some people that are not really funny, but they think they are. And they crack themselves up and you find it. But everybody has a home. And so if you got $1 billion, but where you go back to emotionally every day is pissed off and frustrated, what is the quality of your life? It's called pissed off and frustrated. If you got the most beautiful children and the most incredible husband or wife and they love you completely, but every day you live in worry and frustration, then love is not your life. It's called worry and frustration. So what I show people is most people they've got a highway to stress and they got a dirt road to happiness. They're wired. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get pissed off all the time, pretty soon you train yourself to be pissed off. If you, people that crack themselves up all the time over nothing, they've trained themselves to have joy. And I think that's where wealth comes in. I interviewed Sir John Templeton multiple times over his lifetime, including right before he died. If you don't know who he is, the Templeton Funds, he was the first billionaire investor. Funds. I'm talking about, I know you know, but your audience to know. First billionaire international investor. And he made money during the most difficult times when World War II started and Hitler invaded Poland and the whole stock market went through the floor and everybody thought it was the end of the world. He invested then. You know, he borrowed money, invested $10,000. That $10,000 made him a billionaire later on. That's just how much change there is. But when you talk to somebody like him, and I said, what does it take to be wealthy? He said, Tony, it's everything you teach. I said, well, I teach a lot of things. What is it? He goes, it's gratitude. He said, if you got $1 billion and you're not grateful, you're not rich. And he said, you got nothing and you're grateful, you're rich as can be. And I think it may sound corny to somebody, but it's really true. This is where you got to train your mind and heart to find the good. You know, it's like our brains are 2 million years old. They're not designed to make us happy. They're designed to make us survive. So they're always looking for what's wrong so we can fight it or flight from it or freeze and hopefully not have it attack us. But there is no saber-tooth tiger to kill you anymore. So the same mechanism is there. Yeah. So it goes, oh my God, what do people think of me? Or oh my God, do I have enough money? If you live in this country and you're completely broke, I don't want anyone to suffer. You know, that's why I'm feeding 100 million people a year in this country. But I don't want people to suffer. But if you live in total poverty in the United States, here's the truth. You're the top 1% of earners on earth in poverty here. I know it doesn't feel good, but two-thirds of the planet lives on $2.50 a day. So when, you know, people are going, oh, that 1%, the people are saying that 1% and attacking them are the 1%, but they're not grateful for what they globally have. So I really try to show people, how do we train our mind to experience wealth? Because wealth is not just financial. It's, if you don't have happiness, how wealthy are you? If you're not healthy, you know, I always tell people, a man with health has a million dreams and goals. A man with no health has one dream, one goal, get healthy.
Yeah. One of the things that I see a lot of that I'm concerned with is when I'm on social media and I'm looking on Instagram and I see so many people point to the shiny object. Yeah. They have to have the designer purse, the faster car, the bigger house, whatever it may be. And if you're not doing well and you look at that and you see it as out of reach and you see it as something like, I'll never have that, it creates this anxiety and this unhappiness. And do you worry about that when you see all this consumerism and people like saying, I have to have that object? And how do you break that cycle in some way?
Well, I don't worry about it because worrying about something you can't control doesn't do you any good. And it usually lowers your energy and you got less to give other people. So I don't worry about it. What I try to do is actively show people the truth as much as I can. And if people get within proximity of me, they'll learn what it really takes to get that freedom. But it's worse than that because, you know, you read the studies, people, the more time they spend on Facebook, the more often somebody is depressed because but one of my buddies owns a great gym, a phenomenal gym, a high-end gym. And he tells me, he says, Tony, every day somebody comes in, at least once in a day, they lay out the whole thing, they take pictures and stuff like they worked out. They don't work out and they put the shit on social media and they go back and do what they're amazing. Doing. I mean, it's the most crazy thing in the world. It's like all these people projecting. And the worst part about that is they know it's bullshit. So it might feel good in the moment that, you know, they got some followers or people say, hey, you're cool, or I don't know what they think they're getting out of it. But in the end, they know I haven't done shit with my life. And so what makes you feel great about life? You know, people talk about self-esteem. I hate the term. It's such bullshit. It's like positive thinking. You know, it's crap. You need strategy. You need tools. You don't need people to tell you how good you are. Someone can tell you how good you are all your life and you don't believe it. Or someone can tell you you're a jerk your whole life and you go, screw you. I'm not a jerk. I'm going to turn my life. I'm going to make something happen. It's not what people say to us. If that's true, you know, it's so convenient that people remember parts of their life and not their whole life. But what I tell people is it's pushing yourself beyond what you think you're capable of. When you force yourself to do something that's difficult, that's what gives you inner pride. No one can take that from you. And so I think that what's missing in our country is, in our world, is there's such a focus on, you know, being significant in some way, whether significant is by a purchase or by an ownership or by what you've achieved or what you've done, that we've missed what the heart wants, which is love and connection and desire to serve. I don't know anybody who's happy who obsesses about themselves, because the nature of the human mind is it's always comparing to something else. And so if you're focused on yourself, you find yourself in a place where you're not able to really fully feel alive. So finding a way to grow and finding something to give, finding something you care about more than yourself, that's what produces energy. That's what brings lifeness to you. And I know you know it, Kevin, because you live it. But so many people are missing this because there are so few people having this conversation. It's one of the reasons Mark Benioff is such a dear friend of mine. You know, I've been with Mark 15 years. He came to a bunch of my seminars in a row and he walks up and he's hard to miss. He's my size. And he says, you know, my name is...
He credits you, by the way, which is awesome. Actually creating Salesforce was because he was listening to your tapes, right, in the car.
He says, Salesforce wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Tony Robbins. I said, well, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but thank you for saying that shit. But I've been on one the whole journey, and he came to three seminars in a row, and he goes, I'm leaving my job at Oracle. I'm going to start this new company called Salesforce.com. We're going to change the way business is done around the world. He looks me in the eye and shakes my hand. He goes, we're going to do $100 million in business. So I tease him about it. Now they're going to do, what, $12 billion this year or something like that.
But please tell me you got some advisory shares for that conversation.
Well, he's been a dear, dear friend to me in every way. But all I can say
that's
is
awesome.
When you see these kinds of changes that people make, the reason I love Mark is he's not just driven to make money. He's unbelievably successful at that. But, you know, he took, from the early days, we were talking about contribution, he took it seriously and said, I'm going to give 1% of the company away, the stock, 1% of the time for employees, you know, 1% of our profits, which was easier to do back then. But today, the impact of that is mind-blowing. And Google's now modeled him, you know, he's spread that word. So people that understand this aren't just successful. They're truly happy and fulfilled and wealthy because their life has meaning, and meaning comes from growing and giving. If you don't grow, you have very little to give.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I went, you know, you, thank you for inviting me to Unleash the Power Within. Yeah. That was a great, that I went there for a few days. And one of the things that I came away with that I walked with personally was, you know, you'd mentioned the desire to serve. And, my father, who's passed away, he was a, amazing father, but also a verbally abusive dad. Sure. And I realized like my desire to serve is to go and help fund, different initiatives that help women that are being abused in some
way. That's beautiful.
And so I got that out of your show, which I thought was just great, but it just means so much to you when you do something like that. Yeah. And it was like, what's that wheel that you do? I can't remember the name
of
it.
The Wheel of Life.
I love that.
Yeah, the Wheel of Life.
Where you feel like how fulfilled you are. Yeah, that was an amazing exercise, by the way. Good. Did you come up with that?
Yeah, when I was like 20. It's 20 years old, awesome. So I used that for a long time. I did it for me because I wanted to see, you know, I know I'm doing well in certain areas, weaker in others. And it was like, I'm trying to go 100 miles an hour with a wheel that's out of balance. If you're going 20 miles an hour, you can get by with that shit. But 100 miles an hour, it's a rocky road. Yeah. And so that's when I started saying, okay, what does it take to close the gap here? And that's when I started developing some of my original tools, because I had a simple tool that I could just look at in a second, you know, pictures worth 1,000 words, and guide myself to where I needed to improve.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have any upcoming shows you're doing? Yeah,
I wish I had in some ways, because I've been on this 15-city, you know, 8-country tour, you know, North America, South America, like Vancouver one day, Brazil the next, Scotland the next, Orlando then Scotland, and I was in Italy. Then I had 26,000 people in Russia. It was an amazing event. And then I flew to Serbia to do my AI. You know, I'm filming the top AI with the top AI company in the world. And then 22 hours to Australia. So the long answer is yes, I have a bunch of events coming up. But the next big event, like multi-day event, would be in New York in November, the 8th, 9th, and 10th domestically. So anybody would love to come, love to have you. And you go to TonyRobbins.com if you're interested in that. But it's you know, you've been to the event. It's like, how do you describe it to somebody? I mean, it's not, you know, most people think 3 days. You know, I won't sit for a 3-hour movie someone spent $300 million on. But as you know, people are on the top of the stadium, you know, 14,000 people on day 3, and we're 50 hours into this, and the energy just gets stronger and stronger. But people can't even fathom it. They have no reference for it. They think it's rah-rah shit, you know, and you know, it's, we're going pretty deep there. It's not rah-rah. But I do believe in energy, because without energy, you don't follow through.
You kind of have to go all in when you go to the show. You just like put yourself out there and say, you know, we're all going to be in this together. We're all just going to like let loose, and you learn a lot. So thanks for having me on that. One thing I wanted to touch on real quickly, I know you got to run, but I wanted to talk about your routines. Have they changed at all? I know you were big into the cold plunge for a while. I also do the cold plunge. I've done the Wim Hof method, which is amazing.
Yeah, so how's that affected your life?
Oh, it's completely changed it. I would say that when you train yourself to like take control of your breath, we all know that's really powerful, but also just the release that you get of the different compounds in your brain when you're doing this, like, you know, either cryo or I have a cold plunge that I go into, and I like to alternate between sauna and the cold plunge, which is just like, it's an amazing compound.
It really is.
But it's crazy how it gives you like an extra 20% boost in almost every aspect of your life.
I found.
So I do it every single day.
I do it every single day too. And there's never a day where I wake up and go, I can't wait to jump in this 38 degree, or if it's my cold plunge, you know, that's the river. But if I'm on my cold plunge, my other homes, it's 56 degrees. There's not a day where I go, oh, I'm so looking forward to this shit. But I do it because A, it does that physical change in your body, your lymph system, every organ in your body is alive. And, you know, it happens in 3 minutes. But I also do, and I do cryo as well about 3 times a week. You'll go to minus 240 and it takes out all the inflammation in your body in literally 3 minutes or less, 2.5 minutes. But it's also about the mental discipline for me. It's all about, I don't negotiate with my brain. I don't go, well, I'll do it in a minute, or I don't feel like it today. That's bullshit. I've trained my brain. When I say go, we fucking go. Excuse my French, but that's what we do. I don't hold back, right? And so that shows up in every area of your life. When you're in the command-demand mode, where my heart and my spirit, you know, that's what drives me, not my brain. My brain serves me. I don't serve it. And today, because of technology, technology is so beautiful. It gives us so many opportunities. But also, technology is wiring us through dopamine to do stupid shit. Like, look at your phone 86 times a day for the average person, you know? And it's just like, people are wired to do things that don't really mean, or you see people banging on their phone. Give it a moment. It's going to a freaking satellite. Yeah. You know, give it a moment.
Yeah.
The level of lack of, you know, we want everything now, instantaneously. And then we expect human relationship to be like that. And then you got people that have a hard time talking except texting each other, where they feel in control. So I'm a big believer in developing new rhythms where you are in charge, not the brain. You know, people identify in this country more with the mind than the heart. In Chinese medicine, it's all about the heart. And it's not just an emotional mm-hmm. component. Most people don't realize when you're born, and, you know, we know you're not born. When you come to life, we know because the heart starts beating. But what most people don't know, there's no brain at that stage. That your heart is the intelligence of your soul, of your body, of everything. And then you add the brain. And when you see people stressed out, you can look at their EEG and their EKG, you know, the electrical activity in their brain and heart. And as you know, they don't match. So they're jagged, crazy. 2 minutes of breathing in your heart and focusing on something you're grateful for. The heart math teaches this, and you can demonstrate it. All of a sudden, the heart and the brain become one. They do the exact same rhythm. And that's when you're in that flow state where things just come through automatically. And so when you're talking about what does it take to succeed in life, you need rituals that put you in that flow state. So the answer to your question is, yes, I still do that every day. I do not miss. But in addition to that, you know, I have the most intense training schedule you can imagine. I mean, you came, I think, to San Jose, didn't you? There's the San Jose.
That's right, yeah.
So at that event, I was actually wearing this halter. You know, I work with some of the greatest athletes in the world. And so I get to know the trainers and the people that test them. And there's a group out of Tampa that's just genius guys. So I wore the $65,000 halter, and it measures acceleration better than anything else in the world. And about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours in that event, I think where you were, you know, this thing's kind of heavy on my chest. And I look over, see how things are going. And these guys' eyes are like big as garbage can covers. So during the break, I walked up and said, are we okay? And they go, we're okay, but we've never seen anything like this on any athlete in the world. They were all these Olympic athletes. So at the end of the night, they come by. At 9 hours, the battery dies. I went for 12 hours, right? But after 9 hours, I burned 11,300 calories. The guy explained to me, Tony, that's 2.5 marathons back to back. You know, I did 18 miles running around the stadium, going up and down the stairs and everything else, you know, to keep people involved. But he said, Tony, the calorie burn starts 30 minutes before at a level that's insane when you're just thinking about what you're going to do. Your caloric process changes radically. He goes, now here's the other piece. He goes, you weigh 282 pounds. You jumped over 1,000 times in just the 9 hours. Wow. Well, he explained to me, every time you jump and come down, it's 4 times your body weight. So he said, you're taking 1,000 pounds of pressure times 1,000 jumps. That's 1,000,000 pounds of pressure. It's 2.5 NBA games back to back. I go, I don't jump that high. I'm a white boy. He goes, it's not about height. He goes, they did my bone density. And they found, he goes, here's humans. Here's the greatest, you know, Olympic athletes we know in the world. Here's this human we've never measured before. I'm the highest they've ever measured of any human being in the history of their measurements. He goes, and I've never broken a bone because 1,000,000 pounds of pressure day after day after day, your bones get unbelievably strong. He said, you know, when you're running, I know you're an athlete. So when you're running with a friend, you know, there's a tempo that you keep running. You can't speak anymore, right? It's because the lactate builds up to 4. Once you're at 4, you can't speak. After 9 hours, I was at 12 of lactate and still speaking. So they're doing a white paper on my body. So to do all that shit, the training and regimen I have is completely insane. My trainer is rated the number one trainer in the world. He's trained some of the greatest boxers. He's trained, you know, The Rock, people of that nature. And what we do, he's told me multiple times, he goes, Tony, nobody does this stuff. So I have this device, you're probably familiar with, called a Vasper. You sit on it. It freezes your body as you're sitting on it while you do this intense workout. And I've added to it oxygen deprivation. So on the hills and everything else, I have no oxygen. So I got to push at a level that's insane. But in 21 minutes, you get a workout that's the equivalent of, you know, doing, you know, back-to-back workouts of an hour and then a climb up the hill of 2,000 feet. You get that workout, but you don't have a lactic acid. Oh, you also have compression on your arms and on your legs. So it calls lactic acid to your body because you grow by the demand. You grow when you're sleeping and when you're resting, as I'm sure you know. But the bottom line is I push it so intensely, but what's so cool is the next day I'm not unable to move because the cold keeps the blood that normally to cool you off goes to the outside of your body, it stays in the muscles. And so the level of growth and demand you get is amazing. So 3 months later, they tested me again. All my numbers were the same except one thing. I had 20% more output with the same heart rate. So my resting heart rate now is, you know, 44 to give you an idea. So what I do is a regimen that's completely insane. I have my own hyperbaric oxygen chamber. I do 40 hours every, you know, 3 months, basically. I have a stem cell company, as I think you know. We raised $250 million for it, but I got involved in it to save my ass. You know, I tore my rotator cuffs. 3 doctors said surgery is the only way you can do it. I've had multiple friends do it, and they can't lift their arm above their shoulder. I did stem cells, and it worked perfectly. I had spinal stenosis at a level that they said, you know, one good hit, and you're a quadriplegic. You can't jump. You can't do things you're doing. I didn't accept that. I went doctor after doctor. I got the highest level of stem cells. You can't get them in this country. And I went and did that, and my spine now operates great. So I do stem cells every 3 months. I mean, I am obsessed with making sure this body can carry this spirit as long as possible at the highest level of performance. And so I'm obsessed by doing these things. And they're not hard for me anymore. They're just part of life. You know, it's like anybody works out, you know, you want to do it most efficiently, but I have hacks for everything. And I'm always looking for how can I do more with less? Not necessarily easier because that doesn't always work, but more with less. So it takes less time to produce a greater impact.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hacks, one of the things I should say, if people are listening and they think like, I don't have a cold plunge in my house like you guys do, one of the things that I did when I was living in New York is I would turn on the cold water just in the faucet in my shower, but I realized there was a regulator on there preventing it from going all the way to the coldest. So I disassembled the shower, removed the regulator, got it to go all the way to the coldest. But you can use like in the winter months, which is when I do a lot of this stuff, you can just use the standard tap water.
Absolutely true. That's amazing. You figured that out. I hired somebody to figure that shit out. I didn't know how, but you figured that out on your own. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because I'm sure you travel a lot, right? So you got to figure out how do I get to the cold water. So one last question. You know, you are always on the go. You have a ton of energy. How do you calm down your mind at night? Like, how do you get to bed? Like, you've got your go, go, go. Like, how do you, is there breathing exercises? What is it?
I've got a ton of different things, but the two things that I found that are best for me, there's a device called a NuCalm, N-U-Calm, C-A-L-M. And it's been used for 400,000 dental patients, but it was designed for vets coming back to put you in parasympathetic, which is where your body heals. You know, sympathetic is when you're hyper intense and can't sleep. Parasympathetic is when you calm down in that area. And it used to be like $3,500, but they've come out with a new version. It's only $500, and it is genius. You know, your brain needs GABA to relax. But when you're in sympathetic, when you're in that, you know, cranked up state, your brain can't absorb it. And so they give you this tablet of GABA. They used to, now they just give you this this device that transfers it in your body electronically. It's pretty amazing. And then you put a little stimulator on your neck, and it's like kind of like a TENS unit, only you don't even feel it. And in 20 minutes, you're gone. I mean, you're in the most incredible place. I use it usually for my meditation process to go super deep, but sometimes I use it to help me to go to sleep or calm down. But the thing I use most is another thing I do every day is a PEMF machine. So it's a, you know, a magnetic device that's used in Germany. It's cleared for destroying cancer cells. You know, healthy cells are 80 millihertz, I believe is what's the right description. But it's 20 and it's a thin wall on a cancer cell. It's why they multiply so fast. But it shatters those cells. It's that much voltage going in your body. It's approved here in the United States. And I use it when I was starting to do my shoulder and my spine. I used it for that first because I was at 9.9 pain and you know I can deal with pain. It took it to 5. It was manageable. And then the stem cells healed it eventually. But I still do that every day of my life, the PMF machine. And I do it usually for 20 or 30 minutes. And if I'm really hyped up, I turn it on the parasympathetic setting and I go to sleep on it initially and it'll knock me out. But it takes a lot, as you might guess, to slow my ass down. And like for today, you were so kind to move this back because, you know, my body didn't know what country we're in. And at 7 this morning, I'm still, my eyes are open. You and I are supposed to talk at 11. I'm like, oh my God, I've like, I got to get to sleep. So how I eventually did it was the PMF machine.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. Well, Tony, thanks for your time. Of course, your book Unshakable is now out in paperback, right?
Yeah. I hope people pick it up. You'll feed 50 families and change your own life as well.
And where can people find out just general information about your events and everything else?
You can just go to TonyRobbins.com and there's a schedule there. They can check us out on Instagram or Facebook or anywhere that you naturally would normally go. We're there.
Awesome. Thank you.
I really appreciate your time, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Take care.